Blog Talk Radio.
Show must go on. That is Queen, of course. And the song The Show Must Go On was featured as the 12th and final track on their 1991 album Innuendo. It is credited to Queen, but mainly written by Brian May. The song chronicles the efforts of frontman Freddie Mercury continuing to perform despite approaching the end of his life. And although his diagnosis with AIDS has not yet been made public in spite of ongoing media speculation claiming that he was seriously ill. When the band recorded the song in 1990, Mercury's condition had deteriorated to the point that May had concerns as to whether he was physically capable of singing. May recall, I said, Fred, I don't know if this is going to be possible to sing. And he went, well, it's PG-13. I'll effing do it, darling. Vodka down and went in and killed it. And completely lacerated the vocals. It was released as a single in the UK in 91 and in the promotion for The Greatest Hits 2 about 6 weeks before Freddie died. And following his death in 1991, the song re-entered the British charts and spent as many weeks in the top 75 as it did upon its original release, initially reaching peak at number 16. A live version with Elton John on vocals appears in Queen's Greatest Hits 3 album. Again, Queen, the show must go on. And, of course, this is Deborah Lee, and you're listening to A Team of Voices Radio. We are sponsored by the A.P. Taylor Poetry Foundation, and we all hang out at allpoetry.com. It's a site, one of the biggest, and it's free to join. If you join or are a member, you can find us listed under the group tab, A Team of Voices, and knock, and I'll meet you there. And the reason that we started tonight with a song by Queen is because the poet we are featuring, whose words we are featuring tonight, JCA, just happens to be one of the biggest fans of Queen, if not the biggest. And he's here with us. Hey, Jay, welcome to the show. Glad you're here.
Hello. Hello.
And I also have in the studio Raconteur, who beat me to the studio this evening. Hello, Rack. Glad you're here.
Hey, guys. Hey.
And I have Steven, one half of our dynamic duo. He and Kay run A Poetic Slice of Life. She couldn't make it tonight, so he's going to read two poems for us this evening. Hey, Steven, welcome to the show.
Hello.
And we have one more to let in at the moment, and that is none other than Mr. Wayne Jen. Hey, Jen. Hey, Wayne. Glad you're here.
How you doing? What do you say, JCA? How's it going, man?
Hey, what's going on?
You got it. You got it.
We haven't heard you in such a long time. It's great to hear you. And, Wayne, I don't know if you saw the chat wall on Saturday, but I sent some congratulations on the wall to you for your sixth All Poetry anniversary. So happy anniversary there.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it. It's been 6 years of my life.
Awesome.
There you go.
And before we jump into the show, I just want to shout out because Wonderland is in Oz. And that's not a code. That just means that Jay Hatter has landed, and he's in the Uber with A.P. Taylor, and they're on their way to A.P.'s place right now. So watch out, Oz. Here they come.
Woo-hoo.
Now, right? Should be a great 3 weeks, and let's hope that Oz survives it. Now, before I put the first poem on the board, what I was going to do is I was going to see if we could get JCA to read the 10 quote choices that I grabbed from his poems, and then we'll get underway. So, Jay, I just added them to the chat wall. If you would tell everybody what the choices were, please.
Sure. Number one. Shards that strewn on the linoleum floor opened my chest, gave it all, but you wanted more. Number two, the opal orchid that glows in the pearl reflections of sea-skimmed moonbeams. Number three, as the blackbird whistles the onyx requiem from my bone-chiseled ribs, Banshee's Bay under the tequila moon. Number four, smoky shadows from the lemon-tumbling sun fill the dust-lined horizon sprinkled with neon fireflies in the pines. Number five, life whispers the deaf requiems to the ears of the blind soldier. Number six, spitting and coughing the scarlet life, body seizes as the voice leaves my mouth. Number seven, a beaded oval moon covering the crystal clementine dots, pockmarked in a million polished pewtered shooting stars. Number 8, you fed me smiles under seaside amethyst nights, twisting fingertips under the cotton-sprinkled sky. Number 9, he left his blood and his stopwatch breaths on dusty grains of chestnut sands. And number 10, branches snap in the canyon of my patchwork skull, breaking soundless swells of the windless winds.
Great poem.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So I think that the choices were awesome, and I cannot wait to see what kind of poetry stems from them. And I am going to shoot this over real fast so that I'm trying to read too many things at the same time. Okay, shoot that over so that you have that, Jay. Now I'm grabbing Kay's poem. And Stephen, if you would tell us what quote she chose and then read for us, we'll get this show, well, the show must go on.
All right, the Diaz reference here is, as the blackbird whistles the onyx requiem from bone-chiseled ribs, Banshee Bay under the tequila moon. And Kay calls this dispiriting malicious tones, misanthropic the guise. Inky colored branches tea lighting the pallid night air, scarlet begonias weeping through trembling smoky hints of nightcaps, as foliage folding stems falling victim to steel's death, our thundering hails running pitch dark as armaments of codes raven betwixt moonless crestfallen stages. End poem.
Aha, I see it runs in the family. I'm looking at a 4-line 10 here. That's awesome.
Yep,
okay. Yeah. Wow. I love the title there. Dispiriting malicious tones, misanthropic the guys. Really, really clever brevity. Clever metaphors right in the title. And I think it's the third. As foliage folding stems, falling victim to steels of death. The imagery there is spot on, and it kind of brings the photo that she chose to life too, as well as Jay's quote. And that reading her quote made me realize that I usually start off the show wondering which one will be the most popular out of the 10 when I choose them. So we shall see. We started with number 3. But, yeah, no, great images. Awesome read, Stephen. And, Kay, congrats on that 4-line 10. Woo-hoo. They are so hard. So hard. Anyhow, JCA, what you think?
Well, first of all, there's so much to take in such a small amount of words. You know, it's just putting so much together while trying to really think and decipher it. You know, that she captured the darkness of that picture quite well. But there's often times within darkness that you can feel kind of like a peace. And this is almost like what I said. There is a peace within this almost ominous darkness. And I think that is such a cool feeling to be able to grab something like that. It's more of an internal struggle, an internal feeling that permeates one's soul and permeates one's mind. And this is like the beginning of a thought, a beginning of something that you're going to sit down and contemplate and sets the tone for that particular contemplation. This was brilliantly done.
Fantastic comment. And Stephen, as the next reader, will you please comment for your wife?
Well, yeah, I definitely, like Jay said, I think that she captured that picture very well with the darkness of her words. And I told her in my comment that she brings a sadness mixed with those dark images as well. And I think that, yeah, like you said, Deb, I think that third line is my favorite too, the foliage folding stems falling victim to steels of death. Yeah, I thought this was great, and I'm glad that she was able to join the four-line 10 club.
Yeah, that's so cool.
That sounds funny and get dirty at the same time. I don't know why.
Yeah, a little bit, right? But yeah, I have one. And I know that Crystal Hope wrote one after the show the other day, I think. And she said, I'm going to give it a try. And I swear I blinked and she was sending me a link. So, like, I wasn't surprised, though, because she's one of she's an amazing brevity writer. The four-line tens would probably be easy for JCA, too, because he's an amazing brevity writer. But it was so hard for me. I lost count of how many times I tried, but at least I have my one. Oops, I'm talking to the mute button. I hit it by accident. Stephen, do you want to tell us what's coming up before or after you read?
Well, I can do it right now. So far as I know, on Wednesday, the show will be at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, although it's still subject to change depending on what happens around here since things have been so crazy lately. But it is the Poetic Inklings on Wednesday, and it is going to be our visit with our Artist of the Year, Lisa Esato. Kay found a lot of wonderful paintings from her, again, as always, and they're filled with images of light, images of sadness, and maybe images that are mixed like that, too. Check them out in the folder over there. That's, once again, right now scheduled for 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. And then Thursday is Storyboards with S. Dark Holm at 8 p.m. Eastern. And it being May, and actually being May the 4th, Sky will start her whole month of Star Wars shows. And the first one will be Star Wars Volume 15, The Bad Batch, Season 2. You can do character rights, quote rights, scene rights, whole episode rights. You know, come out and geek out with Sky Thursday night in Storyboards.
Yeah, it was like fun. And yeah, I agree that those pictures were awesome. Of course, I wound up going with the butterfly so that I could do the soapbox thing, but there was a couple that I had to talk myself out of to stick with the butterflies. And then I was like, oh, maybe I'll do another one. And then I'm like, no, it's one a person. Just back off, right for those butterflies. But, yeah, cool artist. All right, sir. Well, your poem is on the board. If you want to tell us which quote you chose and then read for us, that would be fantastic.
All right. I went with quote number 9. He left his blood and his stopwatch breaths on dusty grains of chestnut sands. And I call this, and I never saw him again. Tottering palm of his hand 'twas gringent and raised, as through red rose petals the sun whispered rays, whispered past thorns wove through lattice on clay, reflected cross window panes into my eyes played. 'Twas the last morn I saw him on that bright azure day, peat-potted plant grown cross cobblestone footway. He waved and he smiled, and round corner he glid away. I'd not see him after, so my welling eyes did not stray. End poem.
Well, surprised, or should I say unexpected, for the art that you chose. Wow. And I never saw him again. Just the title itself is, you know, laced with sadness. Tottering palm of his hand was ringer raised, as though red rose petals the sun whispered rays, whispered past thorns wove through lattice of day. I like how the whispered is carried through line 2 and line 3. It pulls you down. But the whispered past thorns wove through lattice of day the thought of the thorns, it's pretty gripping, pretty sad. And then, of course, you know, reflected cross window panes into my eyes played that there's a, I guess, Easter undertones hit me there with the thorns, of course. But to drive it back home all the way again at the last line, I did not see him after, so my welling eyes did not stray. It's just really, really another very powerful brevity. It's got the sadness, and you could feel it as you were reading each line. And the tone in your voice matched the tone of the poem, too. I think you did a fantastic job with it, and especially the stopwatch breaths there, the quote that you chose. You did a stellar job. Excellent brevity, Stephen. Jay?
Thanks, Steph.
When I was a child, I went to Montevecchio, which is the town my mother grew up in, in the foothills of the Alps. The picture itself is very similar to the city, to the village streets. I'm not even going to call it a city, to the village streets right there in Montevecchio. So when I saw that, it was like an instant touch of nostalgia. And then as the words just dripped from the poem and from the page, it kept on reminding me of those that I've let go in the past and those who passed and touched my life but ended up just moving on or passing away or just, you know, became that moment in time that I was living, but also that I had to let go of. But ultimately, it shaped me who I am today. So I appreciate stuff like this that actually makes me feel, just makes me have emotion. And that's what this did. So you did such a great job.
Fantastic.
Thank
you. And since I'm going to read mine next, I thought maybe I could get a comment from Raconteur this time.
Yeah, I really like that, Stephen. I think, you know, when you take a couple of lines out of a poem, it's a snapshot. The overall tone of the poem, you know, tends to be, I guess, a little more involved, layered. But when you take a couple of lines, you know, it's kind of easier to hone in on a specific thought and run with it in your own direction. And you took this and you made it your own for sure. And there's a definite sense of nostalgia of you know, when someone, you know, you never see them again, that idea of they were in your life and then they disappeared from it, that really hung on this. I kind of tied that very much to the stopwatch breath of, from the original quote. So the two of them worked very, very well together. I appreciated it very much. I thought it was excellent.
Thank you, Rick.
Fantastic comment. And Stephen, I don't know if you're going to stay for one or go, but I appreciate you calling. And if you have to go, be sure to share a hug with Kay from us. And if you guys click on mine, I'll read. And mine's got like four of the quotes in it, so I turned it into a collaboration. So you'll note them in. I can't ever pick this one. So, all right. This is called Summer Nights on Lighthouse Point. We walked up the sandy cashmere trail to Lighthouse Point, with the dark trickling into the pink lemonade landscape lines. Now smoky shadows from the lemon-tumbling sun fill the dust-lined horizon sprinkled with neon fireflies in the pines. 16 shades of purple blues st- stain the sky beneath the clouds that shift into big seagull shapes as the brine sea breezes blow. And the fading light from the opal orchid that glows in the pearl reflections of sea-skimmed moonbeams ripple in the tide's flow. A beaded oval moon covering the crystal clementine dots pockmarked in a million polished pewter shooting stars blink as seashells wash up on the beach, then waves crash and splash, depositing ridges on the shoreline made from wet sandbars. Dolphins jump, silhouetting the glow, peeking from the shrouds. All summer you fed me smiles under seaside amethyst nights, twisting fingertips under the cotton-sprinkled sky by the lighthouse. Then, under the moon's pearly glow, you'd take me to new heights. And boom.
Wow, Deb, that's fantastic. You know, like you said, to call it a collaboration when you borrow so many lines from his original quotes, it's only fair to do that. But you still made it your own. There's a lot of crayons in it, and the way you take us on a journey, there's always emotion tied to the way that you do your color metaphors and everything. So there's a definite, like, you know, Deborah feel to it, but there's also a Jay feel to it. It's actually kind of weird. I don't know that you two have collaborated much, but it was lovely.
Thank you, Ryan.
Jay, what'd you think, Jay?
Well, this was fantastic. Hold on one second. Bottom line is the way I see this is you came out, took my lines, and you told the story. You came out and created something that had emotions, and people will look at it and say, "Wow, this truly looks like it was a brilliant piece of your history." Even though, you know, it never happened, it feels like it happened. You know what I'm saying? This is a way to touch art and bring art to life. And that's what you did here. You brought art to life. You took my words and you intertwined your words and you gave them life within kind of the atmosphere that was created within the picture itself. I think there's something absolutely almost spiritual about lighthouses. And within that, you create almost an elevated feeling within all those things. And I really think that is awesome.
Well, that's just comment, Jay. Thanks so much. And Stephen did stay, so how about if we just let him comment so that he can go hang out with Kay?
Yeah, I thought that. Well, I'm gonna hang for Wayne because I don't often get to listen to Wayne Reed, so I'm gonna hang for that one as well. But I thought that this was great, Deb. I thought that the way that you rolled the quotes in, using your own colors and imagery, you really brought us to the beach to watch the day turn into night. I thought this was great.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was easy because he had crayons in his, so of course I just grabbed my box and tied them together, and it was fun, and I'm glad that it came across like a story because that's where I was going. So thanks, everyone. Yeah. And Wayne has the next...
I was just going to say, you both know how to color within the lines, so perfect.
Good one.
Yeah, perfect, yeah.
And thanks for doing that, Jack. Wayne, did you want to comment and then read yours for us? Or no, I got your recording, sorry.
Yeah, you got an easy one for us tying all these together and making a good story out of it. I think it's fantastic. I was looking at which one I like the best, and you can't hardly tell your lines from his lines. So they so blended so perfectly. Great storyline, perfect read, and two of y'all did a great job. Oh, it was a wonderful job, and I was fine with it. My point about it, I mean, this come up here is one that's kind of a little on the abstract, I was walking the abstract line a little bit, but J.C. always writes poems that has the the greatest vocabulary I've ever read. It's the words that amaze me. So he just put me in, so I tried to copy him a little bit, but he's always a little bit on the abstract side, but I always had the great storyline. I always admired his poetry, so I hope you enjoy this one.
Awesome, and I'm noticing in the author's notes that the quote is, "The opal orchid that grows in pearl reflections of sea-skimmed moonbeams."
Yes.
Click on there, and oh, hold on. Let's see, we've got a purple person in the room. Hey, Chaos, welcome to the show.
Hey, Deb.
Glad you're here.
How's it going?
It's going okay. These shows have been coming out really amazing to the point where we just have to keep the comments to a minimum just to fit them into the two-hour slot. So, and as you know, tonight we're featuring JCA. So before I push play for Wayne, I better grab the next call as well because it might be one of those Wonderland kind of meet-up in Oz phone calls. Hey, guys.
Hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I am well. I am here in Melbourne, Australia. And
hey, Abby.
So is my guest. With me.
Hey.
With Heather.
Hey, Heather.
Hello, gentlemen.
You're both in the same room. That's too cool.
Hi there.
I don't think Australia's big enough for y'all.
We are here in the only Melbourne that counts, Melbourne, Australia. Yes.
We were all thinking that Oz better watch out, and that we hope it's big enough for the both of you.
Crazy.
Oh, no. It's going to be absolutely fine, Deb. Absolutely fine. We're in good shape. Hatter is, I think, probably the best way to describe it, is completely stuffed after traveling for 16 hours and 2 days to get here. But and he's just giving me his book. Thank you very much, Hatter. Oh, that's nice. I like that very much.
So
here we are. We've just exchanged books, and Hatter's having Sprite.
Awesome. Well, Hatter, I'm going to forgive you since you're all the way on the other side of the world and tell you you don't have to worry about co-hosting tonight. Just chill a little and get over that jet lag. And I'm thrilled for you guys. Have a blast, and I guess unless you plan on hanging out, I'm about to play a video
Cheers.
For an audio for Wayne Gent.
Cheers, guys.
Well, thank you. No, well, we're gonna say bye bye for a tick while we get organized, and we'll try and do a poem and come back.
Yeah.
Cool. That sounds like a plan, and I'm really happy for you both. Hatter,
yeah,
nice shirt.
It's only been years.
Like that, huh?
I know, right? So excited.
I forgot I
had. We'll talk to you guys later. Have fun.
All right. Love
Thanks,
you, respect.
AP. Okay, talk soon.
What a pair.
Well, there they are. They're both in Oz. How about that? Okay. Now, without further ado, let me go push that button for Mr. Wayne Gent so we can see what he did with JCA's words here. Wayne, here it comes. All right, here we go.
This is called Wind on the Waves. Singing cypress in hollow chambers of sea. Sharpened sunken sands weep in shoreline tree. Prism popsicle people, knitted cashmere girl. The opal orchard that grows in a pearl. Reflections of sea-skimmed moonbeams. Laughing mountains tickle cloud-cushioned seams. Distant drops glowing in recycled wave. Bingo blinking, eyes butterscotch concave. Trigger trinkets trembling as oceans fly. Flamingo flowers giggle in softened sky. Dancing in denim dust on milky membrane. Lemongrass lady fingers flute to contain. Wednesday's wind whispers to waterlogged wave. Beach breeze kiss to caramel-colored kids gave. Sundown shadows sing saxophone blues. Silence tossing purple hues for lunar light views. His
awesome background music there. I think I could hear the waves moving at the beginning. I like the undertones of romance that were in the line too. Prism popsicle people knitted cashmere girl, the opal orchid that grows in a pearl. I like how you played with that there and then split it to the next line with the reflections of the sea skin moonbeam. Laughing mountains, tickle clouds, cushion seams. I, like I said, I like the way you split the quote into the two there and pulled
it
down. Yeah, I like that. And then in the third stanza, trigger trinkets trembling as oceans fly, flamingo flowers giggle in softened sky, dancing in denim. Dusk on milky in membrane, lemongrass lady, fingers flute to contain. Mr. King of Alliteration, and you hear me when I try to quote some of your lines, and I always like fumble, and you just read them so smoothly, like it's just as a matter of fact, you really are the king of alliterations. Beautiful romantic imagery, fun wording. I think you did a great job of it, and of course I love the art that you chose. Looks like the beach in Seattle City. Great share range.
Yeah, I brought a line that attracts a little bit.
Say that again, Wayne.
So I brought a line of attraction a little bit in this poem because I kind of want to get up on the edge a little bit. But I think I kind of did that. Thank you for the comment.
Pleasure. Okay.
I'll have a pina colada with an umbrella, please. And this was. Let me read what I wrote. It was pure poetic picture painted perfectly. I love how this was put together because you did put us on a beach. You described the feeling from being on a beach, you know, and this wasn't the playing or anything like this. This was sitting in that beach chair. This was just relaxing and just letting the umbrella shade you know, getting a little sun on the legs and letting the breeze of the waves just hit your face, and then you have all of the pictures around. I love the prism popsicle people knitted cashmere girl. You know, you when you go to the beach and you just sit there and you look around, you see stuff like that. You see people of all different sorts, and you know they're in all their bathing suits, and their bathing suits remind you of, you know, a mix of popsicles, just whatever they're
color they're wearing, you know, the different clothing. It's so bright, and there's so many people with so many flavors and so many such an area where it brings out the variety of people. And I just love how it's fully descriptive, and you absolutely you nailed the picture. That was the important part, and I just love that.
Great comment there, JC. Hey, great comment. Nice to hear you again, man.
Ditto. Sure is. Great comment, Jay. And Ms. Chaos, you're the next reader, so can you comment for Wayne's poem, please?
I'm a huge fan of alliteration, so I'm just blown away by this one. Putting that much of it into one poem is just so enjoyable. This last stanza is awesome for me. The sundown shadows sing saxophone blues. It sent me back to, I know it's not really, this isn't really a New Orleans kind of picture, but I used to live in New Orleans a long time ago. And there was a guy who sat on the what they call the moonwalk. It was kind of a boardwalk kind of place. And he played the saxophone right there by the river. And that kind of took me back to right there. And it's really a happy memory for me. So it was like a shiny happy for me right there in that last stanza. So I really enjoyed this one.
Thank you very much. I enjoy New Orleans, too. New Orleans is a great place to be down there, and they got the music and everything. It's Barts on the Bay. It's where I'm staying at. It's a great place down there.
Awesome. Great comic, Chaos. And your poem is on the board. If you would tell Jay which quote you wrote to, and then take us away.
I'm the one next. Is that
unless
what you
don't
say?
Want to. Unless you're not ready.
Can I call right back, because I'm getting kind of in and out.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to hang up and call right back.
Okay, cool. And while she's dialing back, I'll just say I like how there's been a variety of the quotes tonight. Usually after the first couple or, you know, the first handful are read, there's been a standout quote, and tonight it's been a mix, so that's pretty cool. And she's back, so let's see if she likes that connection better. Hello, Purple Girl.
Hi.
Is that better?
I think this is much better, much, much better.
Cool.
Had a bad connection there.
You just, like I said, tell Jay what you wrote to, and then read for us, please.
What was that?
Which quote did you pick?
Which quote did I pick? I picked, let me go down to the bottom of my poem here so I can read it. It was, shards that strewn on the linoleum floor opened my chest, gave it all, but you wanted more.
Awesome. Okay, so
then,
go ahead and read for us.
And the picture was the like a little castle kind of thing, like a part of a castle. I know I got mine in like last minute. I mean, I finished, I think I posted it at like 9:06 or something. Okay. And it's called, I Should Have Known When We Didn't Have a Song. It was instant. In a moment, you were magical. A treasure to hold dear. I had found my prince after too many frogs. The fear followed. Friendship was all we would allow, so we said. Others saw more. So many whispers about what we were. We joked about saying those vows, but you never knew. Was that your word? I would have promised you forever and a day. But fate stole me away, and sickness swallowed all hope of me being anyone's to have and to hold. Yet you felt like home, and they looked to you like a white knight. You made us a family over the years. You gave them hope in broken-down castles. Then frustration fractured into anger and fear, and you were gone. You say there was no judgment, but I could see the scales in your eyes. Measure me if you must, but I know where my pieces are missing, and you don't know where they fell. Where is the justice in setting us up like dominoes? It should have been black and white, but we were made of glass when you toppled us one onto the other.
Damn. That mega power in that. Jeez, it was losing off the page. And I kind of feel like we probably all were gripped by the same stanza, but I'm the host, so I get to go first. And wow, you said there was no judgment, but I could see the scales in your eyes. Measure me like it must. Measure me if you must, but I know where my pieces are missing, and you don't know where they fell. That part was like, oh, my goodness. And the other part that really struck me was back further, I think, where you made, I can ever find them, something to the effect of making us a family. Where is it? Maybe it's down further.
I thought it was closer to the top.
I thought so, too. I'm having a hard time finding it. I hate when that happens. Anyway, all others saw more, so many whispers about what they were, what we were. We joked about saying those vows, but you never knew. Was it your word I would have promised you forever in a day? Another really amazing part, and I still never found it, but I really, the piece about making us a family was really powerful too, Chaos. I think that...
Okay.
The part about making us a family for years, I never found the stanza, but if you look at the picture, there's a sadness to that broken piece of a real sandcastle type of thing, and you exemplified the emotion in the art and the quote in your words, and they hit really hard. Powerhouse, right? Wow. What do you think, Jay?
Okay.
Well, first of all, the castle itself brings me back to Highlander, the movie, which, of course, Queen performed all those incredible songs for. One song in particular was Who Wants to Live Forever, you know, and that, of course, goes, Who Wants to Live Forever When Love Must Die? And this right here is just a journey into hope, into promises, into a person who leaves. And it's, what word am I thinking of? Not rejection, but when someone leaves you, they abandon. This is a story of abandonment. This is like a gut punch in that. And this was, you know, ultimately you're going to have to live the rest of your life with these feelings that happen. But it's like, once again, that line from Who Wants to Live Forever comes to mind, when love must die. And that's what you're showing us here. You're bringing us to a place where, you know, you have to live and you have to feel this, but the love itself has died because of the abandonment within that. And that's what Castle reminds me of. It's an abandonment. And the whole story, the words, they're a pure walk through that particular feeling of abandonment, and you were able to take your words and tie this. It's a beautiful scene. It really is, you know, when you take a look at the picture. But you have, throughout that beauty, you have that one thing of emptiness in there. And I think that that is fantastic when you're able to grab something like that. I think it's a very relatable feeling, and we have all been there. So I think you've done an amazing job with this.
Thank you. Highlander is actually one of my favorite movies, and that song, I can't make it through that song without crying.
Yeah, I hear you. I love those movies, and that's one of my favorite Queen songs, probably because of the series, but still. And let me see, Angels is up next, and she can't comment. So, Raconteur, will you? Oh, before you comment, hold on 1 second. Welcome to the show, sweet. Glad you're here.
Hi, everybody. Sorry I'm late.
That's all right. Better late. And you missed the call from the two guys in the same room in Oz, Hatters, with APS.
Oh, how awesome is that?
Yeah. After a long wait and a long flight, they are together. So, Raconteur, please. Comment for Chaos?
Well, if I'm hearing right about a sandcastle, I love that imagery because, you know, a castle is designed to you know, protect you from a siege. But, you know, if it's made of sand, it's just going to shift. So that thought applied to that emotion works very well with the idea of the abandonment, and tie that to the quote about, you know, she wanted more. So it's like, you know, he didn't just leave. He had an excuse. But, you know, there's the whole idea of trying to hold up to that excuse. So that's a very layered thought. And you manipulated it well into your words as well. You know, that there's a lot more than just abandonment there. There's the sadness of trying to make it work and just watching it fall apart too. Very well done.
Thank you.
Fabulous comment. Okay, now if you guys click, I'll move it down in case, because I see the board's moving a bit. If you click on the next poem, I will read for Heavenly Angel. And I am trying to, well, looks like I'm not the only one. She was influenced by 4 of the quotes. Let me make sure they're not in there. Okay. As the blackbird whistles the onyx requiem from bone-chiseled ribs, banshees bay under the tequila moon. Also, a beaded oval moon covering the crystal clementine dots pockmarked a million polished pewter shooting stars. Also, you fed me smiles under the seaside amethyst nights, twisting fingertips under this cotton-sprinkled sky. And then the last one is he left the blood and his stopwatch breath on dusty grains of chestnut sands. Okay, and the poem is I Adore Spending Time With You Whenever by Heavenly Angel. And here we go. Amethyst nights pockmarked in a million polished pewter shooting stars, twisting fingertips under the cotton-sprinkled sky. I get drunk off one sip of you. I'm high on loving you, high on loving you. I want to be found by you just so I can be alone with you on dusty grains of chestnut sands under the tequila moon, wherever the four winds blow. End poem. Well, there is our queen of romance there, always. And I like how you just, it seems like you tweaked it just a bit to add to the quotes to pull out the romantic feel. And in the middle there, the repeat of I'm high on loving you, high on loving you, gave it like a lyrical feel to it. And I like the, I want to be found by you. It's kind of that sentiment that we would all, if we were waiting for somebody. There'd be that someone we would want to find us. And then to end it, you know, you want to be there together wherever the four winds blows. A very romantic brevity and a great use of the art and the quotes. Appreciate it very much, Angel, and it's always my honor to read for you. Jay, what you think?
Well, I think it's, once again, you're absolutely right. The Queen of Romance strikes again right here. I really like how she always swoons within the words. She always brings us into this amazing feel that we can just walk through this. She did take the words and she painted the picture, and I really love how it's like, you know, there's these moments within life that you feel and you just have this essence of just a romance over you, and you can stop time within those moments. And I do like the ending, wherever the four winds blow, because it kind of reminds me of the ending for Bohemian Rhapsody. Any way the wind blows, you know, and so she takes that, and I really enjoyed the whole thing, the way she takes it. And you're right, that middle refrain, I'm high on loving you, high on loving you. Wonderful job, Angel.
Great comment. And I am going to your recording is next, Raconteur, so will you comment for Angel, please?
I'm muted.
Raconteur, are you muted? Maybe he had to step away for a moment. Wayne, would you comment for Angel, please?
Yes, I would. I would like to. This is a great blend of the quotes. She concentrated quotes into a masterpiece. J.C. had as many words as she did, or more even, yet she put them together in a romantic hue that's just perfect. I'm amazed at how she did this. It's a great way to write, and she did a great job with your quotes there, too, J.C. Wonderful one.
Fantastic comment. And let me see something over here. Okay. Raconteur, are you back with us? Tell you what, I don't want to do his piece until he gets back. So I'm going to, sweet, I sent you an inbox. And I'm going to grab the poem that Titus sent. And
sorry about that.
You're back.
Ah, there you are.
I had to take a break for a second. I'm sorry.
No problem at all. But your poem is on the board. So since you are back, I'm going to play that. And I
it was the fifth quote.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm just about to read the quote. It was number 5, Light Whispers, the Deaf Requiems to the Ear of the Blind Soldier. And if everyone clicks on the link, I shall push play in the studio. And Chaos is back. Let me let her back in first. Hey. She called back. Okay, and here comes Raconteur's recording.
In the Dark by Raconteur. Tomorrow seems like yesterday, absolutely no different than today, engendering a sense of futility that saps my will every time I open my eyes. Fragmented fractals form faint figurines. Vaseline visions vaguely verifiable. Smudged silhouette-shaped streaks. In a world of specters, everything is shrouded in shadows, indiscernible from memories. Distance between objects become insignificant. Everything will always seem just out of reach. Uncertain if anything is able to pierce the veil of umber. Pride is now a foreign concept. Independence, a wisp of smoke. Tomorrow remains as certain as my footing in an unseen reality. It's no wonder my eyes struggle. The eyes of a ghost. Someone broken beneath notice. No different than the friend who would be so attractive if they'd just lose a few pounds. I used to think my perception was skewed, but nothing could be clearer. My eyes reflect the world as it truly is. The path I'm on, I travel in solitude. The echoes of my footsteps fading into silence. End poem.
Wow. For one, I can see this one was a front page pick. Congrats on that. And like, I knew when I chose the quotes for this that it was going to be some powerful emotions running through here. And this is a prime example of that, too. Uncertain if anything is able to pierce through the veil of lumber. Pride is now a foreign concept, independence a wisp of smoke. Tomorrow remains as certain as my footing in an unseen reality. So much. What was the other? The eyes of a ghost, someone broken between notice, no different than the friend who could be so attractive if they just lost a few pounds. And it's just like, even that was hitting hard because in some eyes, it's like the beauty in the beholder thing, because in some eyes, it's those extra few pounds that make them more attractive to certain people. So it just, it's a perspective. And towards the end there, I used to think my perception was skewed, but nothing could be clearer. My eyes reflect the world as it truly is. And sometimes it's not something that you see from someone. It's how they make you feel and the impression they leave you with that really makes you see them clearly. And I get that kind of feel there. And just for a minute, back up to the top. Tomorrow looks like yesterday, absolutely no different than today. And just that thought that the like an endless cycle of same as SSDD, if you know what I mean, same stuff, different day. I mean, it's just like a vicious circle. Your rights are always very powerful, Rack, and especially these ones from the heart, from the Hurt Locker. It's just like, I dare anybody to listen to you read any one of the poems that are in your Hurt Locker and not feel them by the end. Another powerhouse for sure. Jay, what you think?
He makes us feel. Bottom line is, Rick makes us feel. His voice that he puts to these words just take your heart and drags them along on a journey. I feel like this is a mix between someone who all the visions of the past are fading away, yet at the same time they're like a vagabond walking through this world trying to charter unfamiliar territory and move with a
motion, a motion, not emotion, a motion that is alone, that is you're dealing with situations and you feel that no one else walks through that situation with you. And I think it's just something that at times every one of us can relate to. And that's what makes Rax writes so powerful and so emotional, is they're so relative to our own lives and our own feelings at times. And I think he does an incredible job with that.
Thanks, Jay.
Awesome comment. And the next poem is by Titus, and he's not here to comment. So, Wayne, would you comment, please?
Yes, I'd love to. I said, as we get older, we seem to live our lives in our own little solitude and no longer tell the stories of our footprints have left behind. I feel a contentment in this. It's feeling about that solitude in life is my life. I've lived my life where I should have, and I'm happy with my life. So solitude is good in my view. In your view, you have a little lost love there that you didn't need to cover up for, but great poem, a lot of emotion in it, and I love it all the way through. You did a great job of this.
Thanks, Wayne.
Awesome comment, as always. Thank you, Wayne. All right, and I am looking here. Titus, the quotes that he chose by JCA are 5, Life Whispers the Deaf Requiems to the Ears of the Blind Soldier, and number 8. You fed me smiles under seaside amethyst nights, twisting fingertips under the cotton sky. Okay.
Did you pick the same to us?
The same to you. You had me repeat for you. Let's see what he did with it. I click on the link, guys, and I shall push play for Titus. Here he comes.
Each so brave a royal knight now stands. In Flanders fields 'tis where the brave have slept, while time would have been flagrant to us all, merely a blush to recollect who kept, and yet does not forget how great the fall. Deaf requiems the past and present smile, as soldiers each their wounds are healed untold. Still, stand aground men, now then single file, where victory was planned, survival grew. Each so brave a royal knight now stands. The liberty to which freedom belongs, blind faith, all ears do carry its commands. The amethyst whispers like his scanty songs, to right the wrongs of an impartial fight, has lived as might we have done now to save those souls, include how vividly the plight, be dight to have men heightened, such are brave.
Well, the background that he chose drove the poem as well. It added to the feel. And he started right off in Flanders Fields, where the brave have slept, while time would have been flagrant to us all. Merely a blush to recollect who kept, and yet does not forget how great the fall. That's a powerhouse right there. Especially, it's the wording's just a little bit different, and yet does not forget. And Flanders Field is quite often tied to the phrase "lest we forget." So that the emotion caught there with the words is perfect. And then I like Deaf Requiems, the past and present smile, as soldiers each their wounds are healed untold. And you think about so many soldiers that have been hurt or gave it all, and their stories aren't told. So there was a lot of emotion in this, and towards the last stanza, to right the wrongs of an impartial flight, has lived as might we've done now to save. Those souls include how vividly the plight bedight to have men heightened such are brave. I like the overwhelming amount of respect for the soldiers that come through this. And, of course, he always has such a classy way of wording his poems. I can't say enough how the feel of the pride and the empathy for the soldiers is shown. And in just four stanzas, he also pulled the emotions out of us. Like I said, it's everybody's really hitting on the emotions. It's impressive. Hope the job's going smoothly, Titus. Great to hear it, hear from you, and appreciate you supporting my show every week. Jay, what you think?
This one touched personal to me. Actually brought me to my time in war where not all of us made it back. And to actually look at this, as soldiers, each their wounds are healed untold. You got to understand we're never fully healed. You know, whether it's a physical wound or a mental wound, we will always have something that holds on to us from that time, that holds on to us from those moments. The faces that we will no longer ever see, the people that even ended their lives when they came back, who had to change everything when they came back, when they, none of us were the same, none of us returned back as the same people. And to have a poem like this written, you know, you know, people call us heroes, or they call us like they're role models, but it's really hard to say that we're a hero because we don't see ourselves as that. And I don't think we ever will. We were just doing what we had to do and what we believed in. And we went to a place, and that's what we had to do. And it was a sacrifice of who we used to be and who we are now. And he grabbed a hold of that throughout his words. And I truly appreciate when someone can grab a hold of these type of poems and write them in such a way that he can make us feel. And I really appreciate that.
Awesome comment, Jay. And my sweet, you're the next reader. Do you want to comment, please?
Titus has a way of making me think. And this makes me think on a level of compassion and historical dignity and shame and gratefulness and sorrow and so much thankfulness and pain. It's such a poem filled with emotion that is very difficult to put into words. And I'm often kind of someone who has to go back and study stuff. But this isn't something you study. This is something you absorb and take to heart and take pride in what everyone's done for you, the way he has spoken. And for that, you just have to admire him. And this is just an excellent piece.
Fantastic comment. And I'm moving yours back down a little because the board's busy tonight. So if you will go ahead. Oh, do you want to tell us what you have coming up before you read?
I do. I have a show coming up on Thursday, which I'm very excited about. I've got to get my board up. May 4th, I believe, is the Force Be With You Day. But my show's not about that at all. But may the Force be with you. My show starts at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And my show is about poison. How do people poison each other or toxic effects on people? Or whether it's sly or deliberate or those little things that can be poisoned, like, oh, you're pretty, but your sister's so smart. Or little things that jab, and people may not even know they've done it to you, or those outright things that are just poisonous. So the poison effects, the toxicity that people spread, just that, just little things like that. So let's see what we can bring. Little children, be it fiction, maybe it's true, maybe it's fun. That's what I'm doing.
Sounds
good. Come on, yeah. All right.
Wow.
So.
All right. So tell us what quote you wrote to, dear heart.
So I wrote to, he left his blood in his stopwatch breeze on dusty grains of chestnut sands. That is what I wrote to. And it is called Thoughts on a Silent Battlefield. It is lonely, people milling about, cacophony of silence ringing on deaf ears, music elevated, heard by the dogs of the wild, no feather pillows to rest upon, but rough sand is my comfort. Pondering if wealth has betrayed me, keeping company with the sadness of poverty. Silence is loud in a battlefield when no bullets are exchanged. Rhetoric jumbled, mumbled, news false to flame. Unpatriotic bigot races now weaved into the common name. Weaved into the headlines, news of the war games. All the same rules, all the same symbols, all evils. Only the price tags of lives have changed. Battlefields lay in silence while words are spoken and nothing is done. And Paul.
Wow. Pondering if wealth has betrayed me, keeping company with sadness and poverty. Silence is loud in battle when no bullets are exchanged. Damn. Another really powerful brevity here. Towards the end, I see weaved into the headlines news of the war games, all the same rules, all the same symbols, no differences, all evil. So true. I think that you definitely brought the prompt to life, and I like the photo that you chose because it's just one lonely guy in the picture, the beautiful, heard by the dogs of the wild. There's something about that. I like how you tied in the art with that line. And sometimes you wonder, you could probably hear them howling in the background because they could probably, aside from their own fear of hearing what's going on, animals are very empathic and they can feel the pain and ache of the sorrow in the air. So I think that you did an amazing job tying the art in with the quote. And as usual, I might be a little bit of a Sweet Pea fan, Who knew? But no, but amazing brevity suite. What you think, Jay?
Well, when I was in Baghdad, there was a little place called Z Lake, and I did get to go fishing there, so it was a very unique experience. But as the sun went down and it started getting dark, you always heard something along the waterline. And I came closer to it, and they had always run away. And I did get a look at some of them, and they looked like coyotes to me. But I found out that in reality they're jackals. So they are the wild dogs of Iraq. So when I saw that line, I was like, you know, a lot of this that you wrote about is the emotion of those veterans who come back. It's just about every single one of us, because war never fully leaves us. But there are some people that actually, some of the veterans actually take comfort within what they had over there, because they're never the same on when they return. Like I said before, they're a different person. They're a different entity from the person who went there. I always explain it in my poetry with, a young boy beforehand, and that young boy is never found again, because what remains is the blind soldier. And this is kind of what the homeless veterans kind of go through as well. You know, people look at them and they misunderstand them, and they tell people, they tell their kids, don't look at them, just don't even put your eyes towards them or acknowledge them, we hear all these words like unpatriotic, bigot, racist, and everything like that. And we get different feelings and different things, and there's so many different messages that are put out there, when in reality, all we should be doing is trying to take care of them, trying to find ways to take care of my brothers and sisters in arms, because of who we are now compared to what we were then. We're different. We will never be the same. And sometimes society expects us to return and to conform like they think we should be. They don't take into account the things we went through and how it has changed us now. And that's where the travesty within this, everybody says the war victims are the families that lose people. And I have to agree with that. But I also want to add that every single soldier, sailor, airman, marine who went over there lost themselves. So they are victims as well. Wonderful job, sweet.
Thank you, Jay. I agree with everything you said.
Great comment. And Raconteur, can you comment for sweet?
It took me a minute. I got to get the mute button.
No
sorry. She's got an amazing depth of empathy, I think, and it comes out in the way that she expresses herself. And I'm sure there's a lot of feelings that hit close to home too, that we have no way of knowing where what she's drawing on when she does it, but it's from a first person perspective. You aren't in the war, were you, sweet?
Well, my junior was.
Yeah, okay. No surprise. Your words are very touching. They always are, and they really hit home, and you know, they're always relatable and beautiful.
Thank you.
Awesome comment. Okay, so with only about a half hour left to go, I'll give you the rundown of where we are at. We have 1, 2, 3 recordings to listen to, and then we have the last two poems that need readers. We might actually fit it in, the 2 hours. Let's give it a try. And I don't know how much longer you'll be able to stay, sweet. Otherwise, it'll be me, Jay, and Raconteur finishing up. So if you guys would click on Pee-wee's poem, I will push his recording.
Without him. Across open expanse, like a shout it beckons, spirit soaring through these flooded plains. Distraught and disheveled, this steed seconds ago, so wonderfully whole, now radiates pain. Lifelong companion of a man, no, her brother. Body laying on the ground, bloody pool beside. Although she cannot speak specific words, tormented horse was well aware that he had died. Together since birth, they had been a team. Not a man and a horse, but something greater. As a well-oiled, in-tune and thriving machine that met its fate via a cannonball's bloody crater. Left there through the abdomen of a lifelong friend. He was the only thing in this world she'd known. As the blackbird whistles the onyx requiem, bone-chiseled ribs, banshees bay under the moon. Life had now whispered all of its death requiems to the ears of the horse of the deceased blind soldier. A traveling companion, her spirit in her hands, walking these plains alone, without him or home.
Another one where the music in the background, there was a somber tone to it that added to the poem. And okay, without him, across the open expanse like a shot it beckons, spirit soaring through these flooded plains, distraught and disheveled the steed seconds ago while wonderfully whole now radiates pain. And I think that's what it was. It was like the background music was like sobbing, and it radiated pain too. And in the middle, together since her birth, they had been a team, not a man and a horse, but something greater, as a well-oiled, in-tune and thriving machine that met its fate, cannonballs, a bloody crater. And the visuals there are so sad and scary, and the thought of the two being separated and the pain of the separation is palpable. I thought he did an incredible job with the prompts or the quotes that he chose there, and I like that the closing stanza, life had now whispered all its death requiems to the ears of the horse of deceased blind soldiers, a traveling companion, her spirit in her hands, walking these plains alone, without him or home. Oh, so powerful, so emotional. My heart's breaking for the lost period, but for that horse, because people, not enough people realize that, you know, the animals ache too. it puts me in mind of the pets that belong to, on a totally different level, that belong to senior citizens, and they're devastated, and then often there's no place for them to go, and they're heartbroken and all too. So like the pain from the animal got me, the pain period got me. Fantastic. And before you comment, Jay, let's say hello to AP and Heather. Hello.
It's
glad you're back.
Both of us did. Thank you.
Hello, Heather.
Hello. Australia.
Good to hear you both in the
You'll
same room, Hatter.
Yeah.
All right, let me get
you know.
Comment here for Pee-wee, Jay.
Well, I was transported. I was transported, I believe, to the Spanish-American War. Right on the battle line when you're this was storytelling and poetry. This was, you know, a soldier and his horse and cannon fire. You know, this was something out of the Old West, and I absolutely loved how this was brought from the Old West into like a modern setting. It was a Western feel. You know, if it wasn't the Spanish-American War, it was the outlaw Josie Wales. You know, this I love the feeling that this was brought into. I think that that it was unique, and it was just like the story was brilliant. The words, the accent, everything to it kind of brought out that feel.
Excellent comment. And AP, you're the next reader. Did you happen to hear the poem? Can you comment?
I did. I really like the image. I love the words. I love how it started. That open expanse and the and that sense of capturing the imagery of that's there and that sense of longing. I think that was beautifully picked up, not just in the SoundCloud, but in the words, and very, very beautifully constructed. Really enjoyed it.
Excellent comment. Thank you. And do you want to tell us what quote you wrote to and then read for us, please?
I do. I wrote to the quote, "A beaded oval moon covering the crystal clementine dot spot marked in a million polished pewter shooting stars." There you go. That's what I did. I picked an image. And this is called Scarlet Frostings. And it goes a little bit like this. Crimson shades the heath by the flowing grasses, tumbling past the trail that curls till boughs drown, while the clouds are bunched, eking out the passes through the brush and bushes tinted brown. Frail, the frostings of pink to ochre flow in their hues, a palette of tidings brushed onto this canvas found, towards the faint shimmy of here once distant blues, warming as beaded in the slight hills drown. Until eve, when the scarlets dissolve towards black and the moon shapes the gathered stars to a frown, shooting stars polish fields lost past a known track, until the display lies lost in streetlights of town.
Wow. Frail, the frosting of pink to ochre flow and the hues, a palette of tidings brushed onto the canvas bound, towards the faint shimmy of here once distant blues, warming its beaded in the slight hills drowned. Always great rhyme, but the image there, especially the frail or frostings of pink and ochre, the colors are there, the feel there, the frail, just that word, frail. You don't think about how powerful it is until you apply it somewhere, like the any minute it could snap type of thing, you know. And back up at the beginning for a minute, crimson shades, the heath by the flowing grasses tumbling past the trail that curls till bows down. The thought of it bowing down is pretty powerful, too. Just three stanzas, but you packed a lot in there and brought the not only the art but Jay's quote to life. Until the display lies lost in streetlights of town, and the end there, until it's lost, hits pretty hard. And I'm surprised that you were able to call back because, like, you've been going crazy getting ready for Hatter and going over and getting them and everything, and then come back and throw together a poem that is image-filled and a powerhouse for the quote and the art, and I appreciate it very much.
Hatter was watching me write it, Deb. So,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, Deb, you're better in person.
I bet. Awesome share. Jay, what do you think?
Okay, I instantly got pulled into a little Peter Frampton. The song "Baby, I Love Your Way," the first verse where it goes, "Shadows grow so long before my eyes, and they're moving across the page. Suddenly the day turns into night, far away from the city." The words that are painted in there, you know, that they almost pull us to a moment where the sun is setting, the moon is rising, you got a little of the amethyst and you got a little of the different colors that are mixing in here and there. You're just about ready to see that first star in the sky, and then you're waiting to see the planets come up and everything like that. And there's that moment time that just grabs a hold of you that's like a transition from one point to the other. And I believe that this right here, what he has written, captures that moment. And not just in a way with words, but it's like he took a canvas and he started with a paintbrush painting away to capture this. He took a picture and turned it into a painting. And I think that is a wonderful job on how he was able to bring this to life.
Thank you, Jen.
Awesome comment. And Raconteur?
The mute button is his enemy tonight.
I know.
It is.
Right.
Yeah, the mute button's been vexing me, as it were. I enjoyed it. And of course, now getting mad at the mute button, I completely got lost. I'm sorry.
That's okay. All right, well, I suppose that you guys are going to go have a little fun together. So I appreciate you calling, even though you're about to start your adventure. Is Hatter bring a poem?
Hatter has a suggestion.
Ah.
Deb.
What might that be?
I would like to hear J.C.A. read "She Was Never Alone."
I can do that. Give me a minute to grab it. I can do that. I am heading to your board to grab it, Hatter, or your wall, whatever.
Hey, Hatter, while she's doing that, I got to tease you. The other night, how you mentioned that, you know, everything in Australia is trying to kill you. Well, you're there with AP. You're there with AP, so I hope you don't piss them off. That's all I'm going to say on that.
Okay. All right. I found the poem. I'm trying to find the chat wall right now. And
okay.
There it is. Okay. Now, JCA, would you mind reading Hatter's poem, please?
Absolutely. This is a poem called She Was Never Alone, A Promise to a Little Girl, by J. Hatter. Each time I watched as she stood in the waves, something she did around midday, politely gazing to the sea, I wondered why, quite innocently. Always wearing the same white dress, her hair strung flowers to look her best. She twirls like smoke on a firelit dune. Each day she's there at a quarter to noon. I asked in hopes someone would share a story of the girl with flowers in her hair. A tale of a girl that lives each day, watching the sea and the crashing waves. Tomorrow I'll wait near the place she stands, hoping that I might understand. She was 11 and lives on Marybrook Way. She likes syrup and pancakes to start the day. She calls her cat Pretty and her dog Scooby-Doo. She lives with her mom, and her aunt lives there too. Her name, Samantha, her eyes so blue. Each day she wished her wish to come true. She called her father, the one she missed. I watched her smile, then blow him a kiss. He went to fight and protect us all. He's handsome and brave and very tall. He said he would come home as soon as he can. He promised me that I should understand that sometime fathers have to leave. That's what he said, so I have to believe. How long has it been since he went away? I've watched you stand here every day. Her father, I could tell, she must have adored. I wonder if she knew there was no war. It had ended a year ago, times three. I feared for Sam and where her father might be. So strong I felt in this little girl twirl who refused to let it change her world. He's on his way. I know it today that he'll come back to me. That's the way it's gotta be. Samantha never missed a day of waves, her hair tied with flowers around midday. A little girl loves, love, little girl's love grew and grew. She never failed to gaze at the sea. She waits for her father's return to her, and that's the way it's gotta be. Summers turned winters many more times. My return was in hopes that I might find a little girl just older, still in a gaze, with eyes so distant, still counting the waves. 10 years have gone, and I have returned, wondering if Sam had ever learned the fate of a father she held so dear. Never to return, I had that fear. I wish there could be, and I was sure it would, around midday, where a little girl once stood. She must have ended her daily quest, realizing that it would be for the best. I bowed my head and thought so sad, the story of Sam and the missing dad. Then appeared the flowers that tied the hair, a little girl grown and a story shared. Her hair with floral, so perfectly tied. She stood there at the place watching the tide. Could it be her after all these years, still refusing to realize her greatest of fears? Then someone was walking slowly towards Sam in a uniform, a soldier, a very tall man. A smile planted upon my face. Sam stood at her special place. A little girl knew he would come home, no matter how long. She was never alone. and poem.
I Hatter, this poem always gets us, and I'm looking here. It's an award winner. It's a front page pick. It's on a whole bunch of lists. It's got over 50 likes and just as many comments under it. It's one of your mega powerhouse poems, and another one of those ones where how can anybody hear the tale of Sam, who you've written about more than once, and not feel what she was going through as she waited and the realization that she was never really alone, no matter how long. Just sometimes I just want to. Sometimes I don't even know what to say, and like this is one of those times. It's the length of it shows how important the right is to you, and all the kudos that I just mentioned between the lists and the comments and the likes and stuff shows how important it is to everyone else. And I was noticing down here that I remember when you said that it was. You thought it was one of Jay's favorite poems by you. And he is another one of the people on that list of lists. He has it on a list, and I have it on a list. And I'm recognizing a lot of the names here, like Andy and stuff, that have it on their list. Awesome piece, totally.
I remember writing it, and you know, I wrote it because I didn't have to witness anything like that, and I wasn't in the war, and I wrote it for all those that had to deal with things like that. But it had to have a good ending. You know, it could not be tragic.
Yeah,
thank
well,
you,
It definitely is a heartfelt poem, even whether whether any of us were there or not. It's heartfelt, but I can see how it would resonate with Jay. You know, Jay, you want to comment?
This is not the first time I've read this poem. I think I've read it out loud before. I think Hatter's made me do this more than once, and it is it's an. Yes, you have. It is an emotional roller coaster, and it is such a piece that you expect the worst and turns into the best, because you don't hear those stories. You don't hear that happening. Let me tell you a little story of my mom. My dad was in war, right? And she was living, I can't remember what state she was living in. I think they were down in California at the time. And my dad was off in war, and the war he was in, you really didn't get to talk, not like the war I went to, where I got to talk to the people back in the States. They had to rely on mail and mail call and everything like that. And ultimately, my mom was not getting any correspondence back from the war. And it was she didn't know what was on and what was happening. Her mom came over from Italy and was helping out with the kids at the time. I was not born at the time. And she was so discouraged. She had made arrangements to go back to Italy with her mom and take the kids, and because she hadn't heard, and she thought she was thinking the worst. And before she left, I think about a week before she left, my dad got to come home. And all of a sudden, you know, it happened where they were together again. And there, you don't hear about the stories like that. you hear about the stories where they've lost the people, they lost the people, but there are those moments where in the darkest times something positive comes out. And for those who don't know, I'm a third generation war veteran. My father and my grandfather were both in wars. So it's something that has run in my family. So I get to hear the story.
There was a reason that they minimized contact to home with a lot of troops. Because if it was intercepted, they could guess or figure out troop movement with officers and specialists. And, you know, it's a spy thing. A certain... a lot of them didn't have mail call, especially in Europe or Korea or whatever it was. You know, JC, you have my permission to take that and use it any way you want, whenever you want. You have my permission.
All right, I appreciate that.
Awesome. Share. And, all right, well, we have four left, two recorded and two not. I assume that you guys are going to start your adventure. And our next show is not until Thursday.
Yeah. So. We'll hang to the end, Deb. So good.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, then, the next poem that's on the board is by Jenny. So if you guys click on that, I shall push play.
Done.
In case she didn't say it in the recording, the quote she chose is, "Spitting and coughing the scarlet life, body seizes as the voice leaves my mouth. And smoky shadows from the lemon tumbling sun fill the dust-lined horizon sprinkled with neon fireflies in the pine." And here we go.
Peace to horror, letting the ocean take me. Splendid and plentiful, grateful to be at ease. Peacefully looking into the smoky shadows from the lemon tumbling sun, feel the dust-lined horizon sprinkled with neon fireflies in the pines. Setting the sails, I sail into my next adventure. Slowly the current leads me, guiding me on where to go. Following the sun during the day, letting the stars show me the way at night, I find myself at sea, out of the safety of the reef. Entranced with the whales and dolphins at play, I can't take my eyes off nature's miracles. The beauty turns to nightmares. The animals disperse as the storm comes in. Scared and alone, wet and cold, the tides turned. All the joy and peace has gone, now flooded with fear and misery. Spitting and coughing, the scarlet life, body seizes as the voice leaves my mouth. But no one hears my screams. The waves are crashing. The sun is now gone. The thunder rolls on. The lightning strikes. The boat is sinking. 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 Sink. I'm drowning. No one to save me. At the bottom of the ocean, out of breath, it's all going dark. No more light. All hope is lost. My soul now belongs to the sea. I am now one with it. No more suffering. And poem.
Wow, wow, wow. I think this is the most theatrical that she's read. I know you're out there, Jenny. I think you did a fantastic job with the presentation. Let's start there. The changes in the tones in your voice added to the suspense in a couple of spots. I think you did fantastic. The title, Peace to Horror, Letting the Ocean Take Me, is a scary title to begin with, and you got me to, when you added to his quote towards the end there, spitting and coughing, the scarlet loaf body ceases as the voice leaves my mouth, but no one hears my screams. And I've said this before on some of the shows, in my nightmares I go to scream and nothing comes out, and I don't think there's anything scarier in my mind at the time than trying to scream for help and there be no sound, and even if there was, there was nobody to hear it. So like, that part got me, the waves crashing, the sun is now gone, the thunder rolls on. It's just, it was gripping in the details. But again, I can't emphasize enough how the difference when you first started making your recordings. And I remember at the one time Hatter said, take a deep breath and count to five before you read. And ever since then, your reads have got stronger and stronger. And now with the suspenseful music and the notes in between each emphasis, I thought that this was a brilliant presentation all the way through. And I see it's an award winner, too. Congratulations on that. I think you did a great, great job with the quotes. And I appreciate it very much. Wow. Jay, what you think?
Well, the bottom line is I have been to the ocean. I have seen whales. I was fortunate enough on the Pacific Ocean to actually see whales. I've seen dolphins. I've even seen a rare river dolphin out in the East Coast. But I have also been to Florida when the sudden squalls pop up. And the metaphors within this poem, using the different moments of the ocean and the different ways that bring us to self-torment. This is like the ocean metaphors just drip through the mind, drip in the skull and go all over the place and turn peace into chaos and chaos into peace. And it's like they're fighting over who you are, and you're hearing this and no one's hearing you. And I think that this is true definition of beauty and pain. This is that. Wonderful. And she said she was using her own guitar. Amazing.
Oh, wow. That explains the perfect timing with the twang in between and some of the suspenseful moments. Well done. AP, what do you think?
Well, there was a real sort of sense of longing there, Deb. And I think sort of we got that because of the words, but I think and the way that Jenny sort of went about how she was expressing those words. But I think the guitar was really clever because it sort of fitted beautifully in and just sort of gave it that sort of mood. And I there's something about words that give you something in a poem and give you emotion, but really there's something about having that actually goes and underscores that. And I think, you know, she did a terrific job building that mood.
Awesome. And let me get one more comment from Rack and Thor.
He's on mute. I bet.
Mute button.
Maybe it off. Sorry. It was a different kind of hope, you know, like Hatter's piece was wistful and it had that kind of childlike innocence, and this was a little bit darker, I think. It came from a different direction, but it was still equally emotional. I liked it.
Comment? Thank you so much. Okay, and the next poem is also recorded. It's by Phil the Poet. So if you guys click on there.
Happy anniversary, Phil. Enjoy Paris.
I second that.
so still.
Yeah, I believe he said 20 years. That's awesome. And the quote that Phil wrote, too, was number 5, Life Whispers the Deaf Requiems to the Ears of the Blind Soldier. So I think even though there was a mega variety tonight, Jay, usually we have one that is predominantly takes over the show. Yours were spread out pretty well, but I do think that number 5 is one of the most used ones. So click on that. And I will push play for Phil the Poet, who is with his lovely wife in Paris.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called Creaking of the Windmill. The creaking of the sail waving a final farewell to the sun, dipping down behind the horizon's purple gown of oblivion. Raindrops fall like tears from wooden fingertips, too stiff to bend towards the final descent of a goldenrod star. Crimson silhouette plagiarizes the blood and field, bullet holes splattered upon the pale nauseated door, the smell of death and urine mixed into the sawdust floor, while he cowers from the screams of his unfortunate comrades. Waking up, shaking in a cold sweat, the dreams supplanted in his head, the windmill in a field of terror, causing insomnia to feed, wondering why he was the only one to survive, the haunting creak of the sails slowly passing the night. Scarlet pattern splashed on chalk like a Jackson Pollock painting, while the wind makes the dilapidated sails speak of coming doom. The years pass. The pain is still real. The guilt still strong. Though blind now, he can smell the iron in the air. He still hears the creaking of the windmill that makes him shudder. For life whispers the death requiems to the ears of the blind soldier, or the passers-by will never understand the dark history lying beneath the soil of souls crying out for revenge. End poem.
Wow. I put the art that he wrote to on the board, by the way. I think that the second stanza there, crimson silhouette plagiarizes the blood on the field. A bullet hole splattered upon the pale, nauseated door, the smell of death and urine mixed into the sawdust floor while the cowers from the screams of his unfortunate comrades. The thought of that, He tackled the senses in that, between the sights and the smells and the thought of those screams and the comrades. Second to the last as well, scattered patterns splashed on chalk like a Jackson Pollock painting, while the wind makes this dilapidated sails speak of coming doom. The years pass, but the pain is still real, the guilt still strong. Though blind now, he can smell the iron in the air. And the part that got me there is the years have passed, but the pain is still real, because you had touched on that a couple times during the evening, Jay, where it doesn't matter how much time passes, it just doesn't go away. And he really emphasized that thought in this, and to take the quote and a picture of a windmill and tie it to the sights and sounds that he pulled us through here was an amazing job. Phil never disappoints. No matter what we throw at him, he comes up with something awesome, and appreciate it very much, and like Jay said, have a blast. Jay, what do you
Well, survivor guilt is a real condition, and it happens often in the military. When we lost our sergeant first class over there in the military in the war to a stray bullet, there were some people that just never recovered. They just walked away. They went. I know one person who ended up going to Australia, moving to Australia because they couldn't stay in the States any longer because the United States reminded them too much of our fallen brother. And you often ask, why him, why not me? You know, he was the one that always smiled, always had the positive attitude, never looked down on anything, would always be laughing. Why take that away from the world when you could take someone who doesn't have that, you know, isn't as positive, isn't smiling? And another problem that is pointed within this poem is the fact that if it's very hard to relate to soldiers, especially when you have not lived the lives that they've lived. You have not been to that battlefield. You do not understand what it's like to have like weeks upon weeks of explosions and having to go to the bunkers, and the only thing that's going to prevent these from happening is you see the stealth bombers flying over Baghdad scaring the enemy away from where we are and what we're doing. So I think that he touched a lot on different things that he's probably read in my poetry in the past, and he grabbed a hold of that so well within this poem. They are things that we go through as soldiers. And like I said, he grabbed a hold of it and he presented it in a very powerful light.
Great comment, Jay. And Hatter, are you in there? You want to comment?
Hatter?
He did.
Yeah. You know, Jay, I've got to share something. It doesn't always have to be the war. I mean, I said that wrong. It's not only the war that's survivor guilt. I talk to people on the brain injury radio, and I know what this description of what happened to me, how many roles I did, where they found me. Each one could have taken my life. And I talked to these other people, and I don't want to say that theirs wasn't any worse than mine, but in some cases it was a lot more or a lot less. And I found myself feeling guilty, feeling that guilt. I didn't know that could happen. I survived it, and they're messed up. Raconteur, I feel a little bit when I speak to him. God bless, you know. Not that your wreck was any more or less than mine, but it's just that I came out of that as good as anybody could expect, and I do feel the guilt of why I don't have problems that other people have. I think the older I get, the more I feel it. If that makes sense. I don't want to belittle any soldier by any means.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, though. It makes perfect sense because I'm the same way, you know. When I lost my daughter, I'm like, you know, why did she pass away before I did? You know, different things like that. You are absolutely right.
It's a feeling that's unique to one's life, at least it is for me. It's something something that I don't enjoy, but I don't try to push it away either. I think I need that to the point to see how lucky I was.
Great comment, guys. All right, we have two left. We have one by Xylophonic Blues, and we have one by Oliver Mallet. And Xylophonic Blue wrote to the quotes, "As the blackbird whistles, the onyx requiem from bone-chiseled ribs, Banshee's Bay under the tequila moon." And he's not going to be able to call, so Jay, did you want to read for him?
Sure, I can read. Hal is so colorful in what he brings forth, so I'm kind of looking forward to seeing this. This is written in the form of a vignette, and it's called Charcoal Bone Chiseled Ribs. One, areola playing in the air, charcoal skies riding the wind, honeycombed fusions crystallizing airborne spores, origami fall as snow to lie in the sun. Visions crescent corners stood alongside inked tapestries, daylight echoes oscillating, algae's colliding windmill. Orion's weathered sundial surrounds sunrise's silent maroon tone. Cloaked lines of bubbles along volcanic corridors vent, seagull white caps congregate tumbling upwardly, the sand and silt worn gurgling. Alluvial flexures of sediment, valleys, underground shelters, shingle layers frothing. Midnight silhouettes jumping into the bottle green, lacquered air. Fingerprints wash gravel beds, spouts of whales laid upon detoured byways. Coriolis winds overhead in equilateral solstice, blustery, entangled exposure, swirling trout beneath. Two, watercolors, volcanic meter crossing over, cauldron's chessboard agitates while grabbing ions, mechanisms, galactic moon poles, waters, chlorophyll, lichen, unicellular seaweed aperture, dawn's obsidian stirring, skylight shades reflection, heterotrophic shaped jellyfish, ash papyrus, molded figurine, phosphorus fungi clinging to rocks, past fingers and rain clouds, fleeting dewdrops, porcupine quilled molecules, like a tightrope walker, gravitational pull is convulsive as chains. Three, granites, circumflex routes, bleed within glacial polychromatic, screened angstrom sands dapple in morning's broken lights, quivering arrows shatter, astral decompressing foams, encircle silky gossamer harness on a stream. Sunlit cast dusky slate, apricot celestial sapphire, heliocentric particles and skylines, sachet, origami, catapulted tiger's eye, tungsten, calmulus, the somersault spheres of liquid ribbon eyelids, cathedral vestibule, as the blackbird whistles the onyx requiem from bone-chiseled ribs, Banshee's Bay under the tequila moon. Four, orbital flight passes, masquerades swinging,
alabaster whirlwinds, padlocked hourglass corrosive blanket, twilight's strength amongst cardamom's eclipsed haze, distant mosaics of stained rock, incandescent decomposure, bending stairway, fragmentation unbroken, shuttled nebula, beaming lights cuddle under the sun-faded tarmac road, pendulum horizon's departure, cobalt's electric powder, shimmering stratosphere, eyes of lapis lazuli blue. Poem.
Great read. Thank you, Jay. Yeah, I think you said it in the beginning. His poems are always filled with colors and images and metaphors, like honeycombed fusions, crystallizing airborne spores and stuff like daylight echoes, oscillating algae, colliding windmill, which that's a really interesting way to think about that, because there's always, like, if you can see into the waves, you usually see like some pieces of seaweed and different things in there. So colliding windmill seems like kind of a cool description. In part two, in vine two, cauldrons, chessboard, mechanics, galactic moon, where was that? Phosphorus spongy clinging to rocks. The images are clear all the way through. Vine three, sunlit cast, dusky slate, apricots, celestial, sapphire. Celestial. So I think I was going to the aliens for a minute there. Celestial sapphire. Tungsten cumulus, the somersault, spheres. I like that thought of the clouds there, the somersaults. And in vine four, distant mosaics of stained rock. Incandescent discomposure, bending stairway fragmentations unbroken. The visuals that he brings are always really, really original and clever, and nobody writes like he does. You can recognize his work. I think that the vignettes are his favorite style to write in, and that's because he can pack them with images and take us in different directions, but yet still twist them around with metaphors as well. It's always a treat to hear combinations that he comes up with and stuff. And I think he did a great job with the art, the quote, and the images. And again, I say, great read, Jay. What did you think of the poem?
Well, bottom line is, like I told him, it's like I am watching a tide pool in time lapse, going from the day into night and just through the seasons. And it's like we look at this tide pool and we gain all the individual aspects of it. And I think he did an amazing job with the imagery and the visuals within that. He described each little detail to a T, bringing the different colors and the different feels, you know. The origami fall of snow to lie in the sun, and talking about the foam of the waves as they batter the rocks and hit the and as the tide goes up and down and up and down. I think that he grabbed a hold of that. And he used the detail in there that relates to me in all of the use of the minerals that he used within each of these, you know, the obsidian, the tungsten, the granites, different things like that. I think he purposely put those in there for me because he knew who he quoted. So I really appreciate the way he did that. He used alabaster,
he used onyx, just the different types of rocks that I just love and see that he folded within that. And I think he did an amazing job with that.
Awesome comment. Thank you, Jay. And the last poem is on the board. AP, will you comment for Hal before you read the last one?
Yeah, I will. I love Hal's poems because of the assonance, what he does with his word combinations and patterns, and the what he's doing is sort of building you a sort of a picture of what he's talking about. So he'll paint the sky, then he'll paint the hills, then he'll paint the scene directly in front of him, and he'll do that through the use of the sounds in the words that he uses, and he'll do that through the patterns of the and the way that those words represent things. And so he's always working on a couple of different levels, and it's very clever when it works the way that he does it.
Great comment, thank you. And then you can just tell us which quote Oliver wrote to.
Yes, he wrote to the quote number 10. Branches snap in the canyon of my patchwork skull, breaking soundless swells of the windless winds. And this is Revisiting by Oliver Mallett, and it goes a little bit like this. Dust bracken corners as water spots stain the mirror earrings upon the shell. Soap cracking from over-drying while the rag lays on the floor, crusty and hard in threatening grey. Forgotten. Slates of treated wood in the plum, cigarette smells mask the pot. Who wears the rings? Ash to incense through the garbage without a place for hand washing. Forgotten wood carvings to etching to tackle boxes and plywood jambing doors. Filth dirtying in the steeple forgotten.
In his brevity, he sure took us on a journey there. So cracking from over-drying while the rags lay on the floor. The image there is clear right from the get-go. Slates of treated wood and the plum as cigarette smell masks the pot. Who wears the rings? Ash to incense through the garbage without a place to hand wash. Forgotten. The incense through the garbage. It's just the sense that he put through your mind as he went on. You could just almost smell, and you could hear things and the feel. And I never thought of soap dried up and cracked from over drying as something sad until you think about this, where, you know, obviously everything was more important than grabbing that bar of soap and those rags that lay on the floor. There was a desolate feel, a sorrow packed into all the scents and the recall that was dirtying in the fecal forgotten. It just flat out permeates with the gripping, goes with it, with the patchwork skull breaking soundless swells and the windless winds. And the windless winds, could you imagine if it was carrying some of the scent that he put into the brevity? This was pretty clever, Oliver. I think you did a great job with the quote, and I thank you. You're fairly new, but you sent in quite a few submissions for the shows, and that's very appreciated. Jay, what do you think?
That
life gets hard times, and this right here is something that kind of surrounds that, those hard moments.
you know, there's some times that you feel like you're at rock bottom, you dig your way out, and then all of a sudden you get pulled down even deeper. And ultimately, you just have to start over. And this seems like one of those points that you're brought down to a place where you look your life over and realize where you're at. And you just want to take that step out of it. You know, I look at this, who wears the rings? Like, all of this hard stuff, you know. white rag lies on the floor, crusty and hard. I have seen those. I've had those before. And it's kind of a sad state and a sad look. You know, there's moments of homelessness or moments where you live in places that are kind of the lowest rent, and you're just trying to get by. You know, some of the most wonderful people in the world are people that have had it hard, and I've sat with them, and they just enjoy just the little things that they have. But you also take a look at some of this stuff, and when you walk in that, and you hurt, and you have stepped in those moments, is that the forgotten at the end that he is putting, or do you feel like you are the forgotten? It makes you think right there at the end by placing that word there, and I think it's wonderfully put.
Great comment, Jay. And AP, you read, what did you think?
Yeah, look, Hatter and I were just having a chat off on mute, saying that, you know, I think this poem has real depth, and I think JCA really sort of got it in his comment that there's places that you visit and you know that people haven't been there and haven't been living in there, because little signs, there's the dust and there's the smell and there's the bits and pieces that don't work like they would normally if they'd been used every day. And I think this poem sort of picks up those places that are not lived in, those places that are not frequented by people, and what happens is it gets this sense that's quite different. And I think that's where this poem is, and it's really quite clever.
Great comment. Thank you.
You don't have to be eloquent to come across as true to heart. And I'm not saying he's not. I'm just saying that came out wrong. God. Me. I'm not eloquent in any way, shape, or form. But I like to think that I try to be true to my pen, you know, so the right.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. All right, well, that was the last poem. What a night full of amazing poetry inspired by JCA's words. I just put a link on the board for next Monday when we feature the words of Soak Black Rose along with art from Fine Art America. So click on and choose your art before somebody takes the photo that you want. And I want to thank Jay for the awesome inspirations. And I want to thank the A.P. Taylor Poetry Foundation and the board for a team of voices, A.P. and Sweet Pea and Hatter. Love doing these shows with you guys. And I want to say thank you to Kay and Steven and Tony and Angel and Pee Wee and Xylophonic Blues and Jenny and Oliver and Phil and Wayne and Racontour and Chaos. I appreciate you all very much. The shows are as great as they are because of all of you.
And
Chaos was here?
Yep.
She was here, yeah. Her poem was like, wow. And before we head out with, of course, another Queen song, I wanted to see if there was anything you wanted to say before we leave, JCA.
Yes, I'm going to be working with Lawrence 67, a project coming up here. We're hopefully going to bring Alfie and Nigel to life, if any of you know who those two are. And so look for it in the future, and hopefully we'll be able to do something and bring it to life in a way you weren't expecting.
I've heard a couple of those presentations on your shows, and they're really, really cool. So that ought to be a fun project. I look forward to hearing what you guys come up with. And again, I say, Jay, your words really inspired some incredible poetry, and I'm so thrilled that you were able to get the night off and hang out. And
hey, I got the place to listen to my poetry. Okay, so there you go.
Cool.
Right, can't beat that. And next show's Thursday night at 11 Eastern with Sweet Pea, and she'll have her topic board up as she talks about poison, the kind of poison like people who poke at each other, and it should be a really, really interesting show, so keep an eye out for her topic board. And on that note, we started with The Show Must Go On, and now we're going to end with Don't Stop Me Now by Queen. Love and respect, everyone.
Bye, guys.
I feel alive.
fantastic show. Thanks again, Jay.
Thank you. Good night.
Night.